From Studio 22, you're listening to ServeCast with your host, William Lamb. ServeCast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William.
Welcome to ServeCast. I'm William Lamb. I'm glad you joined us today. My guests are Rachel Lovingood, Heather Ryerson, and Jake Stomm. Now, these three people are friends of mine. They all live here in Cleveland, Tennessee, where I live, and they're working and engaged in community activism and transformation and a lot of other things. They know it better than I, so we'll be right back to let them tell their stories. Jake Stomm.
William Lamb.
What's up, buddy?
Hey, man.
You are in the house.
Good to be back.
Yeah, so you are a previous ServeCast friend of ours, right?
I am. I think I was on one of the first episodes.
I don't
know which number, but
early
it's a huge honor. It's the first thing on my resume.
Yeah, let's talk about your resume. So,
Okay.
Yeah, so
that.
Dr. Stomm, which is a friend of mine, we both went to PhD school together.
We did.
As adults. Which was great, right?
Yeah, we did not do our doctorate as children.
No, we did not do our doctorate as children. That's true. And why did I say that? I don't know. Maybe because you're in the room and you bring the funny things out in my mind. So, yeah, but you're recently now involved in local church work again. You did that for a while, and then you traveled overseas and did a lot of mission work. But now you're back home in local church work in Cleveland. Tell me what you're doing.
Yes, so I am the pastor of the local chapel of the Mission Chattanooga. So it's Mission Cleveland. And we there were about 30 or 40 of us driving from Cleveland to Chattanooga, to the Mission Chattanooga. And about 2 years ago, they asked if we would consider not all of us not having to drive all the way to Chattanooga. And we started a Cleveland chapel with those people. And we've been operating every week for about 15 months now. And it's going way better than I expected, honestly. So I'm really thrilled to be a part of the chapel and everything there. So we used to be at First Baptist for a long time locally, which is where Rachel and the ministry that Heather runs is out of First Baptist. And when I went to help the Mission Chattanooga do a few things and just fell in love and connected. So I'm connected in all kinds of ways to this group of people.
Sure. Now that's not, I mean, while that is, you know, your call and something that you do because it's on your heart, you actually are involved with City Fields, which was previously Impact Cleveland.
That's right.
Give us a reminder and an update on what that is currently.
Sure. Yeah, so I most of my time I spend with City Fields. I'm bivocational, and I take one day a week off, which is today, Tuesday, to do church work. So,
well, lucky we could get him in a podcast on a Tuesday afternoon.
That's right.
Because Tuesday and Thursdays are actually the days that we do our podcast. We're batching it up.
Maybe
that's
I could
awesome.
Just come every Tuesday.
I would hope you
I could
would.
Be your co-host.
I'm serious. Would you do that? We really could do some co-hosting together. So, yeah.
So City Fields began as Impact Cleveland about 5.5 years ago, and originally it was an idea from the president of United Way, the president of Habitat for Humanity, who were good friends, said, what if we chose one neighborhood and we did a holistic development process in that one neighborhood to try to holistically solve the problems that existed in that neighborhood? And they did some research on different possible neighborhoods, and they chose what has become known as the Blythe Oldfield neighborhood here in Cleveland. It's only about 1 square mile, 500 homes. And through a long process of listening and surveying and understanding the community for about a year, then launched Impact Cleveland. And that was part of the United Way originally. And five areas of focus: social revitalization, physical revitalization, neighborhood safety, economic development, and leadership development. Those are the five things we're doing in this one small neighborhood. And then a couple of years later, it was always the intention that United Way would send us out on our own. So we became our own organization and changed our name to City Fields, which is cultivating overlooked areas of our town. And, you know, there's mission fields right here in our own city. So we are cultivating the fields right here in the city in overlooked neighborhoods.
So this idea really, when we say Cleveland, Tennessee, because that's our hometown, that's where we're recording, you know, the podcast from. But this idea of lack and community need for transformation exists in probably any community anywhere in the world.
That is exactly right. Yeah, we are dealing with one of the most low-income census tracts in the whole state of Tennessee here in Bradley County, and there's just significant need. There was disinvestment and used to be a thriving neighborhood in the 20s and 30s, But this is the story in every, especially every rural town, that there are sections that are struggling. And we do envision, we have goals in each five area and each one of the areas. And then once we reach those goals, we will start over in a new neighborhood and start over again and do holistic development.
Cool. We'll come back and talk a little bit about that maybe in just a few more minutes. But Rachel, welcome to what we call Studio 22. It's actually my office. But it's where we record Surfcast. I'm glad you're here.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Now, you and your husband, who Jeff is my friend, actually, you guys are also involved in local church work, and you were previously in Cleveland. You've now returned to Cleveland.
We are. We actually both grew up here.
Oh, wow.
Well, he grew up here longer than me, but I was from like age 10 to 20.
Does that make him older than you?
For sure. Definitely.
Awesome.
You can tell by looking. I know. But
this
so we
is true.
Grew up here, got married at Old First Baptist downtown that Lee now has. And then we went out and to do ministry for, we've been doing it for 31 years. We've been all over the place. And about 20 years ago, God called us back here to Cleveland for a brief few years. And I had two of our kids here. And then we went off again. And then God called us back almost 4 years ago now.
Wow.
So.
Well, and your children, you know, you actually are a grandmother. I'm a papa, you know.
Yes.
That's really cool. I'm unashamed
good.
Of the
no,
fact that I'm
good.
Now a papa, right?
And, no, they're sweet.
Yeah. And so, but your children are also involved in ministry as well, right?
They are. My oldest two, for sure. My oldest son is a campus pastor at a really great church in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And he and his wife have two kids. They live down there, just really reaching the young adult population down there. It's a very art community and just very... anyway, cool place.
Sure.
And so they do kind of cool ministry. And then my daughter is married to a student pastor. They live in Arkansas. And she's a PA in neurosurgery, graduated from Lee University in 3 years, played tennis here years ago. And then they have a baby, too,
awesome.
In Arkansas. And then my youngest son is just, he does ministry just by being a Christian in a dark world.
Oh, awesome.
Which is a powerful thing.
It is. It is. Heather is the wife of Matt Larson, who is actually the current president of United Way, and but more importantly, Heather and Matt are my neighbors, and so I can stand out on my back porch and see their house, and sometimes they can hear all the chaos coming through the fields. It used to be a forest, but there are no trees there now, so now it's just
that the trees are gone, we can hear all the partying going on at the lamb acreage down there.
Don't act like you guys don't party as well. So I can drive by, and sometimes it looks like you guys got enough people to have like a football game or something over there with all the cars.
That's exactly what God blessed us both with, our homes and our properties,
yes.
is to bring people together and to have fun and fellowship. So.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your family. Tell us about your kids. There's like 30 of them. I don't
37
know.
Yeah. if I counted correctly. We have actually four kids. Jackson's 13, Chloe's 10, Gabby's 6, and Elsie is 4.
Yep.
Then we also have chickens, goats, a dog, and a cat, with maybe a llama on the way, who knows. We'll just see what doors open for us. But I also graduated from Lee University years ago and have always had a heart for hospitality and service and bringing people together. So that is kind of what precipitated the ministry that I work in with Rachel and in collaboration with City Fields and Jake here.
Let's dig into that in just a minute, but I wanted to tell our audience the reason that I'm asking all three of you to kind of tell a little bit about who you are and what you do. Of course, Jake will weave in the fact that he's also married and has three sons now, and so he'll probably weave that in as well. That's just hard to have a conversation with Jake and that not come up. But the reason I wanted to give all three of you a chance to kind of talk a little bit about who you are is because you're very busy people, both in profession but also in just your choice to make a difference in the community. And I kind of wanted to start this episode out highlighting the reality that, you know, busy people seem to be the ones who get a lot of things done. So because you're busy doesn't mean that you can't do more stuff. But before we dig into that a little bit, maybe either one of the three of you or either of the three of you that want to jump on this first question and kind of talk about it, give me kind of a perspective. When we say community engagement or the need for community transformation, what does that actually mean, this whole idea that a community needs someone to come alongside them who may live in the community, as Jake does now, but maybe you don't live in the community. Maybe you live in a whole different type of community, but yet you feel this compelling call to kind of step into a place. So what does it mean when people say, you know, there's a need for community engagement?
What
Okay, looks like I'm going to answer this one. That has become a passion of mine. I firmly believe that Christians should, our involvement in the community should cause the things around us to flourish. If the kingdom of God's going to be arrive in Cleveland, where we work, or wherever listeners may be, that things around them should flourish, that we should have the boldness to look at complex problems and decide how we're going to be involved to maybe be a solution to some of those problems. So I have grown to believe that community development and healthy community development principles are something that we as pastors, as I am, or believers, or just humans who live in a city, that we need to come together and figure out how to help develop our communities, especially those that aren't thriving and that aren't flourishing. So I just keep talking. I lost my train of thought.
Well, I can jump in because I was going to say, don't you think that community involvement is just following the model of Christ? Because he walked around the earth doing ministry and connecting and engaging with people. And I think we've gotten a lot too in our society of an us-them mentality. Mm-hmm. You know, us in the church or them over there or that church and this church and that kind of thing. And that's just not what, you know, is not very Christ glorifying and honoring. Mm-hmm. And if we're called to be a light in the community, the light shines the brightest in the darkness. You're not going to be a strong light in the community if you've always got the walls up around your light. So maybe it's time to get out there and let other people see what a difference Jesus makes.
But if you're not a believer, is there still a place for you in community engagement?
For sure.
Oh, for sure. So our neighbor, we just did a massive interview of our residents. So out of all the residents, 500 households, we got back almost 200 responses. And fascinating results, especially right here in the Bible Belt, that the vast majority, 70% of our neighborhood said that they don't consider faith something important in their life, which is a negative thing to us because there's 12 churches in this small area. So we're trying to figure out the disconnect. But what's interesting is that 70% of the people in our neighborhood believe strongly that they need to be responsible for making our neighborhood better. So they may not have a faith piece to that, but there is a desire to be connected and be more involved and want to help neighbors. And this is from the lowest of the low income. It's one of the most low income census tract. It's number 9 in the nation, low income census tract in America. So, you know, people that are in abject poverty, 50% of the household income is less than $15,000 a year. I mean, that's the reality you're dealing with. It's always fascinating to me to see people who are wanting to be involved in making their neighborhood better.
Heather, I know as a busy mom, you know, and getting your kids, a taxi cab driver, all the things that you do, I think that you guys drive up and down our street multiple times a day. You know, it'd be real interesting if you put one of those little counter things across the road and figured out how many times the Ryersons drive up and down the street, right? And now even worse because the kids are actually growing and all of that. So talk to me, Heather, about this tug on your heart when you felt like, you know, being a mom was your call. Being a mom is the fact that you're a mom, but, you know, there's more to that. There's the desire for you to encourage other people that they can make an impact and can make a difference. Talk to us about that tug on your heart. What did that look like? When did you actually respond to that? And what did you do to answer that tug to make an impact in the community?
So for me, I had been reading a book. The book's called Interrupted, and it was about someone else's journey of going from a comfortable Christianity into uncomfortable service. And a challenge was issued towards the end of the book that really spoke to me, and it was, and this is my interpretation of the challenge, the way my heart heard it was, what are you doing besides taking in? You're taking in the Bible studies, you're taking in the Word, you're taking in the fellowship with other believers, but what are you doing to put out in the faith community the principles of Christ? And as I began to think about that, my heart has always been hospitality and service and working with others, and I had gotten away from that a little bit, just season of life. The kiddos are a lot to blame, of course, but, you know, just other seasons of life as well, situations. But I began to think about the obstacles, what things were keeping me, why was I not doing what my heart was telling me to do, and that was get out and to serve. And there were a couple of things that were holding me back, and it was, one was childcare. During that time, I did have some school-age kids, but then I also had a couple at home. Another thing was what to do.
Opportunity.
Mm-hmm. The opportunity. There are so many, and Cleveland, Tennessee is at no shortage of opportunities to serve and nonprofits to get involved with. And so to find an area to narrow that down, not reinvent the wheel, I don't think that that's necessary, but to find a place to partner. Partnership and community is very important to me. I feel like if somebody's doing something well, stick with it, support them. What can you do to come alongside that rather than create a new way to do the same thing? So that was in January, and I put it, it was January 2015.
Okay, so a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I began to pray on that. I put it on my little prayer list that I prayed over every morning, and I did have one conversation. I don't even know if you knew this, Rachel, but I had a conversation with another mentor before I had spoken with you about it, and she was not unsupportive, but she wasn't overtly supportive. And so I just smushed my idea for a while. I thought, okay, well, maybe we'll just wait on that then. And that ended up being a really good thing. We always look at roadblocks sometimes, I think, as negatives. And a lot of times they are exactly what God needs to slow us down a minute until it's His timing.
Yeah.
And so then later that year, Rachel and Jeff came to First Baptist, where I was at the time, and I ran into Jeff in the hallway one day and asked about women's ministry, and he directed me to Rachel. And just a couple of weeks later, Rachel and I sat down, and I proposed this idea of serving in the community. Mm-hmm. Rather than a Bible study, we would do some devotional time together as women, but then we would go into the community and serve alongside each other and whatever organization could benefit from some extra hands.
And what was the timeline difference between when you first felt this and you shared this with a previous mentor mm-hmm. to this conversation with Rachel? How long was that?
I met with Rachel in July, so it was from January to July. Oh,
okay.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. And unbeknownst to Heather, I was already thinking, of course, you know how God does, already thinking some same things. And we had had a Make a Difference Day in June of mm-hmm. that year. That's when I mostly partnered with Jake. We did a lot of projects with him. But we just challenged people to come out. We had 300 or 400 people on a Saturday just go work mm-hmm. all around the community. Mm-hmm. And everybody just responded so well. So I kept thinking, well, we should do this more often. And then mm-hmm. Jeff sends Heather to me, and we sat down at a coffee shop or somewhere yeah. and just said, what could that look like? Because, you know, I didn't know anybody who's doing that. So we just kind of made it up mm-hmm. And just to see what would happen. So
6 months of waiting, thereabout, mm-hmm. 5 or 6 months of waiting after what appeared to be a roadblock, but turned out to probably be a gestation period almost, where God yes. was kind of developing and maturing this dream inside of you. So when you met and you talked about it, you did the Make a Difference Day. What happened? How did you stay connected in this idea?
So the first thing that we did was we identified some other women who okay. had shown interest in service.
Not necessarily moms.
No, not necessarily moms. It did, we did have a wide range of individuals that we kind of targeted, and we asked them if they were willing to meet. We got together. Everybody loved the idea of a practical way to get out and serve. And after that first, we kind of refer to that as our leadership team for the group, which we now call Hands and Feet. And once we met with that leadership team, we put a plan in place of what we would do moving forward. And one of those things was finding partnerships in the community, which led us to Impact Cleveland at the time, City Fields now. And that is where our first partnership really developed. And it's been our most lasting partnership mm-hmm. as well as we've gone forward in mm-hmm. service with Hands and Feet.
Mm-hmm. Great. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back to talk about how this partnership came from a dream to a reality to now a model that others can replicate in their communities.
Thank you.
Hey guys, and we're back. And so before we took a short break, we were talking about this idea that you guys, meaning Heather and Rachel, kind of talked about and let God develop it over time. And one of the interesting things you said that I really liked was that a roadblock is not necessarily a stop. It sometimes can be necessary for you to get on the trail that God's laying for you, basically.
Absolutely.
So you're doing something, but we still haven't talked about what you're doing. So what in the world do these moms, these ladies, these women do that meet on Wednesday mornings, I guess, and they go over to this place called City Fields? So what are you guys doing on Wednesdays when you go?
Well, we have a wide, kind of a wide range of things we do. And it doesn't look exactly like we necessarily thought it would in the beginning because we didn't know what it looked like. There was no model. Nobody had done it. So Heather and I met, and I'll never forget because she looked at and I said, well, we've got like 2 weeks before, you know, childcare and Bible studies and groups start. So let's get it started. And she went like in 2 weeks. I said, well, yeah, why would we wait?
And I want to say, if you encounter someone who seems like a no person in your life, but God's put a dream in your heart, find that yes person. Because Rachel was that yes person for my dream.
And she had been dreaming the basically same dream as me. So it was one of those just fun moments, you know. So we invited those ladies together and we just said, what would this look like? And we met with Jake. And basically what we do is we use the childcare at our church for the people who need that, which is, you know, maybe a third of our group or maybe even less than that.
But those are little kids, right? You can't bring grown kids and drop them off, right?
No, okay, it's like would be like for the women's studies.
I'm just picking.
No, and you can't come. You're too old. But so we use that. So we kind of do it in the same time frame. And our church has been great to work with us on that, to give us a little leeway when we're doing something special, that kind of thing. But we really, like I said, we dreamed it in pencil so that we could just be flexible. And one of our number one rules is be flexible, because we set as our goal that we weren't going into a community to fix it or to solve problems, or that was somebody else's job. Our goal was to go in and build relationships and be Jesus, be hands and feet of Jesus to people. And sometimes that did mean helping with something, but it was never to come in and say, here's what we think y'all need to do. And so we have days that we just meet with our neighbors, which I don't know if Jake wants to, or Heather wants to elaborate.
One of the things that we did initially was to identify some needs that City Fields had, and there were a couple of other organizations, Boys and Girls Club, the Refuge Community Center that we worked with as well initially. Mm-hmm. And we wanted, as Rachel mentioned, we wanted to be flexible, but we also continuously said and say, we do not want you to create a need for us to fill. We want to fill the needs that are in existence.
How did you identify those needs?
We asked questions. We started asking around, what things are you wanting to do that you cannot get done that we could help solve with consistency? A lot of times churches do the big come and do a community cleanup day once a year, and while that is impactful and it's wonderful and we want to encourage you to continue to do those things, we didn't want to follow that model. We wanted to continue to show up week after week. We wanted people to know who we were. We wanted to be counted on with consistency. And one of the areas that we identified and still are working to fill in the Blythe community is the social impact area. And Jake, if you want to talk about how that kind of came into fruition for us.
Well, as an organization, when you do holistic development work, it's very complicated and very messy, right? So sometimes I'm envious of organizations that just do one thing, you know. So if you're...
Define what you mean by holistic for our listeners.
So we are addressing multifaceted problems of the neighborhood. So, you know, organizations that have a very specific mission, like whether it's charity water, that they all they do is clean water, or here locally, it may be a ministry that just does food. Those things are needed, but we feel like our organization's called to address an entire neighborhood. So all the problems that exist in this neighborhood, Martin Luther King is famous for saying, it's our job to pick up the good, be the good Samaritan, pick up the person in the ditch. But eventually somebody's going to have to ask the question, what's wrong with the road? Like, why are there so many people that are hurt, and look at a bigger perspective? So that's what we envision doing, is looking, and if it's sidewalks that need to be, which is a project we're working on now, there's no safe path to get to Blythe Bower School. So we're trying to raise $1.2 million and get a safe sidewalk to school. Energy efficiency was a big problem. We got a $4.75 million grant to do 400 energy retrofits because 1,000 square foot house and their utility bills were $400 in the wintertime. And when you do that for a family that makes less than $15,000 a year, that's just impossible. It's not mm-hmm. sustainable. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at those, trying to keep our eye on these big picture. And what happens is when you're going hard after those things, some of the things that are vital to us, like relationship building, are they can tend to fall through the cracks. And we were desperate for some partners because one of our big population density in our neighborhood are elderly people and older single women. There's a ton of our neighborhood that's over the age of 60 and that have lived there for a long time. And we dreamed that there would be a church that would come alongside of us that wouldn't just want to come to a cookout. And that's what we get all the time. Hey, we want to send our kids over and we want to do a cookout, and that's fine, but really there's no relationship built. Mm-hmm. And our residents, to be honest, get a little tired of like this handout thing and don't appreciate that much. So we kept hoping that there'd be a church that would come along. So when Heather and Rachel approached us, hey, we want to do this thing every Wednesday. Well, we said, well, we've got a list of ladies that would love to be visited. Mm-hmm. And our organization's not faith-based for a lot of reasons. So we can't necessarily do evangelism and discipleship. We do personally because we are believers that are on staff. But we needed somebody to both build relationships and be there to be the hands and feet of Jesus, which is great that they're named that. Fit really well.
So all you do is just show up and visit with people?
So some weeks we visit our neighbors, the people that Jake identified, or Rusty at City Fields. We're strategic and intentional. And so we visit. One week we might all go into homes and visit with neighbors. One week we have projects. Tomorrow's Wednesday, and we're doing a project day. So we'll help City Fields demo some houses, kind of fun. We're a little dangerous sometimes with tools, but sometimes we pick up trash. And as we pick up trash in the neighborhood, we pray and we talk to people who are outside, and we do those kind of things. One day a month, a lot of times we'll have what we call a ladies' day, which is like a mini women's conference. And we just host it over there in the Blythe community, and we bring them in and we have just a fun day, and we'll do a devotion. We might share some testimonies. We might sing, we might play some games, whatever, but, and eat good food, of course. But, you know, so we kind of have a variety of things that we do.
But what they can depend on is the fact that you're going to show up
on Wednesday.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. And we actually have some of our neighbors who they may not do anything else with us, but they know on this particular Wednesday every month, we will be there. We're going to provide their Ladies' Day, and they can come and have that time of fellowship with us. One of our biggest focuses is relationship, and relationship in the community, us with our neighbors. And we call them our neighbors because we wanted to kind of take away the us and them mm-hmm. factor, and really put the emphasis on what we're called to do, and that's to love our neighbors. Mm-hmm. And so we go into their home. So we sit, we visit, we get to know them. They get to know us. And that's just as important, because you can't have that one-sided relationship where it's all about, tell me all of your things and all of your needs. They need to know that we are just as invested by sharing our own lives. Mm-hmm. And we have done things, just a whole myriad of services for our ladies, and that it goes from just simple friendship all the way up to helping to get them financially settled with bill paying and getting their groceries in. We've built ramps. We have helped install bathroom walls. Yeah. We have
rides to the doctor.
Rides to the doctor, sitting alongside them as they have hospital testing done because they don't feel that they have family who can be there. We've become their family. Mm-hmm. We've also done things, just general cleanup, organization, and sharing the word through that. We also have many who end up in the hospital at some point, so we do a lot of hospital visits as well.
Right.
And what's kind of cool is some of the first people that we met, who were a couple of them that I'm thinking of, are a little bit younger and a little bit more physically, you know, able. And they said, oh, we don't want you to come visit us. We want to get in on what you're doing. So they go now. So a lot of the people that we were strategically identifying have now come alongside. But here's one story for you to show consistency, mm-hmm. why it matters. And you ask, how do we always know the need? A lot of it's just observation. When you're in somebody's life, you know what's mm-hmm. going on. Well, we had a neighbor who had a very disruptive situation happen in her life, and it was very disruptive. And we were coming alongside and, you know, just trying to love and support. And then I had been out of town, but I had the opportunity to to go by her house on a Wednesday, because she knew I was coming. I texted her, and I went and just asked her how she was doing. And she told me, she said, well, it's been really rough. And she just told me the truth of what had been going on. And basically, she was hungry. And I said, well, why didn't you call me? And she said, well, I knew tomorrow was Wednesday and you ladies would show up. And when y'all show up, it all gets better. And I'm like, yeah, what a statement. That's good.
Yeah, what a statement. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about it all getting better. Jake, what have you seen as the result? Now, you mentioned a moment ago, and I think this is a very critical statement to reiterate here, that community engagement, community transformation doesn't have to always stem from people who are believers. You know, you can just do a lot of good deeds and not even acknowledge, you know, your need for Christ, or even have a faith choice that you would choose. But you're seeing this still take place on a consistent basis. How has the impact of hands and feet, that's what you call it, hands and feet, mm-hmm. how has the impact of hands and feet, or how has the efforts of hands and feet impacted the community in which you guys are doing a holistic approach, but yet you're leaving the faith development to a reliable partner?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So one of the things that we say a lot in our organization, if people want to volunteer, it would be our preference that people be faithfully present.
Okay.
And
what if they're not faithfully present? What do you do about that?
Then I think that we will allow people to come and do one-time things and leave. But usually what we say is that's going to be more transformative for you than it is for our neighborhood.
And sometimes that talks them away.
Sometimes, yeah. And sometimes that's what they need. You know, if you have a youth group that doesn't realize that there's extreme poverty,
sure.
Sometimes they just need for the youth group to come and see poverty at that level. But we just want to try to not help them convince themselves that they are solving a problem.
Gotcha.
That is for personal growth and discipleship. If you really want to help solve a complex problem, you have to be faithfully present.
And I'm so glad you're doing that. I'm so glad that you're actually making that statement to the both contributors, the volunteers, and to the community, you know, say that sometimes it's not that we're gawking at you. It's not that we're doing drive-bys and look-ins. It's that sometimes, you know, a group of teenagers need to experience, you know, lack so that they can better appreciate what they have, or a group of elderly folks, grandmamas and papas and people like us, right? So continue, Jake. But I wanted to say thank you for speaking to that, because a lot of times, you know, we do leave this mindset in people that, you know, just a quick buy drop in can make a change, and it can help, but it's not the transformation you're looking for.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And we are a strong believer in approaching community development through a asset-based approach rather than a needs-based approach. So we want to find out what the assets are in the community. And that's what I think Hands and Feet does so well, is that we have what they will find through relationship building, is that the residents that they're visiting have gifts and strengths and assets. It might not be financial assets, but they all have talents and things that they care about. Instead of us going in and saying, this is what you need, we know what you need, we listen to them and let those needs arise from them and see them as an asset instead of something we're trying to control or manipulate. So I think that doing community development through a healthier posture, that we aren't here to save, like, not from a spiritual perspective, but from a poverty cycle. We're not coming in to save you from that. Mm. But through being faithfully present and understanding, we can help mentor, we can help lead, and then sometimes we need to follow. Rachel's neighbor is a person that I have learned so much from, and she has actually given us some of our best ideas on community development. She's creative, she's sharp, she has a ton of complex issues in her life, but if you can get her to sit down and talk and listen, if we will listen, she is full mm-hmm. of really practical, creative answers. So I think that understanding the assets that are there, not having pity on people and viewing them as, oh, that poor person or that person can't contribute, but to see them as an asset, people can pick up on that and sense that. When mm-hmm. you approach them and you are willing to listen and you just want to be a true, faithfully present friend, that, I think, is what sometimes we as believers who are attempting to do evangelism, sometimes we overlook these concepts that are, they're more complex. It costs you more time. Anytime you get heavily involved in somebody's life, it gets messy. Mm-hmm. But man, the payoff and the results, mm-hmm. I think, are so rewarding for everybody involved to have transformation for the person that you're visiting and for you. I love one of my favorite stories, and I don't remember I probably will get this wrong a little bit, but when they first started visiting, there was one lady who had a stove and one eye was the only eye on her stove that worked. And we all thought, we need to get her a new stove. And she, when we told her what we were going to do, she was like, oh, no, I don't want all my eyes to work on my stove. That would stress me out. Like, I'm good with this.
I want two stoves, yeah. man, or two grills at my house.
But from our perspective, like from my house, that's it would be unacceptable story. For me yeah. to have a stove with only one eye. But from her perspective, that wasn't really a need. So we learned through listening.
So relationship shows you that.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. Wow.
An honest relationship where you value the other person. People don't want to be your project, but they're willing to be your friend.
That's right.
And that's a big one. So when we bring every semester, we have invite new people to join our, I mean, people are always welcome to join our group, but kind of do a push every semester. We always do a little bit of training with them about here's some attitudes that we want to exhibit as we become, you know, as we're this part of this hands and feet. And that's one of our biggest ones. We're about relationships. We're not about, I mean, we actually do projects, but we don't treat people like a project. We treat them like a valuable person that Jesus loves and died for, and it makes a big difference. Now, think if you had every person that's been in hands and feet in here and asked them a question, they would say, I've probably learned and grown more from being involved in this than I have in anything else I've done. Mm-hmm. Sure. And they would tell you, I've gotten the blessing out of being a part of this mm-hmm. even more than probably some of the people that we've kind of ministered to or worked with. It's been powerful.
And I don't think I ever answered your question that you asked earlier, but I don't even know honestly how to quantify the results of their involvement over 3 years, other than that in every meeting we're in, whenever any topic comes up about hands and feet, the responses, I wish that we just had an audio recording of people saying how they're less lonely, how they know they have somebody who believes in them, that if a lot of people in our neighborhood, if worst comes to worst, like in my life, if God forbid tomorrow everything fell apart, I've got family members I'm never going to go without, because I have family members in my life and who friends. Would swoop in and friends. Like there is not, I might even tear up thinking about it. There's not a chance that I would be homeless only because I have people who believe in me. And I think one that is after 3 years, I think these ladies that they're visiting have this safety net almost. Like, I know if things get too bad, I've got somebody I can call. And that doesn't happen with a cookout. That happens after a friendship is developed and they don't feel like projects anymore. Mm-hmm. And the amount of security that brings to somebody who is on the edge, honestly, of extreme poverty, that security to know, hey, I've got somebody that believes in me is, I mean, it you can't quantify it.
So you guys communicate during the week other than Wednesdays with these?
With our neighbors, we stay in touch with them. And through the summer, we don't meet on a regular basis. So we really encourage continuing on through the summer in relationship with your neighbor. In speaking to what Jake was just talking about, we had a neighbor this semester that was brand new to us. We honestly, looking back, don't even know how she got on our roster. But we signed her up. I assigned her to a new volunteer, and we hit roadblock after roadblock with this young lady. She had multiple children. She wouldn't answer the door. She would respond to phone calls and texts, and she would say she'd be there, and then she wouldn't be there. We kept showing up. We took her a gift basket after she had a miscarriage. We took a Valentine's gift basket. We kept showing up to pray. We kept texting, and at one point, she needed to move from the apartment that she was in. We showed up to help her move. The neighbor that's assigned to her brought her prayer request to us. We prayed over those. She knew that. After the move, she sent her neighbor, our volunteer, a text and said, just gushed with appreciation that she did not know how she was going to do it before we started showing up for her. Mm-hmm. And we had been praying for her son, who had some hearing issues and was going to have surgery. Her son had been healed and was no longer going to need surgery. And she could not have moved if we hadn't helped. And she told our neighbor, before you came, I had no hope. Mm. Now I have hope.
That's huge.
Yeah. I think you've been listening to the story of three people who have made personal investments. Jake, actually, you and Marika and your children moved into the neighborhood, right?
We moved into the neighborhood. Just a block here from Lee.
Yeah.
And sold that house and moved into the neighborhood to be among the residents. And we've just found such great friends. And It's been awesome. But I think the it's beautiful just thinking there's two different churches, nonprofit, and just we don't care about that. Like,
sure.
Right. We have a couple other ladies from other churches. They just heard what was going on.
This is what it takes to meet complex problems, to solve complex problems in a neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Hey, we're coming to a close on this episode. I'm going to ask one last question, and you're going to have to answer it quick. Are you ready? It's a very simple question. In one word, I want you to describe how you have been changed after serving the community that you call your neighbors.
I've been humbled.
Overwhelmed.
I was going to say the word humility. I've just been humbled by the strength and tenacity of the residents in the neighborhood.
That was a lot more than one word. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it
I
was.
Could have sounded better too if I had gone with more than one word.
That's right.
Just because y'all are friends doesn't mean you get extra words.
Rachel, we are friends. Do you have extra words, Rachel?
No,
do you
I'm
have
not.
Extra
I'm
words?
Just stick with it.
You seem like you're overwhelmed right now, Rachel.
Well,
are you
the
okay?
Thing about being overwhelmed
yes.
is it's overwhelmed is good when yes. it's God, and God overwhelms yes. us often. Just like he did on the sermon on, just like he did on the Mount of Transfiguration.
Yep.
He overwhelmed us so that we can see a picture of
Perfect.
Him better. And that's what happens
Amen.
To us.
Well, my one word to you is I'm encouraged by sitting and listening to your stories. The fact that I know you and I know that what you're talking about today is the real you. That's so true. And if you're listening to us on Surfcast, you'll be aware that our guests are chosen and selected simply because we believe in what they do and the impact that they have made, and then we want to celebrate that for what they're continuing to do in the future. Hey, if you haven't caught it yet, we're available on Spotify. As always, we'd like for you to rate and review us, and hang tight after we finish this episode, or at the end of this episode, you're going to be listening to a Lee U worship tune as you meditate on what's been happening in the last 40 minutes, listening to our friends from City Fields and Hands and Feet, and you too can make an impact in your community. Remember, as always, I tell you on the end of Servcast, you are made for more.
Find ourselves waiting again to feel the waves stirred by heaven. Spirit of God, move as your heart desires. All of our walls crashing down as we lean in to hear you now. Spirit of God, speak as your heart desires. Let the fullness of your presence established. Your kingdom come starts within us. Spirit of God, do as your heart desires. Power for hearts open wide. We're expectant. We're expectant. Show us glimpses of you as you do something new. We're expectant. We're expectant. With our hands lifted high and our hearts open wide, we're expectant. We're expectant.
Thank you guys so much for joining us on Servcast. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes and share us on Facebook. Hey, if you've got any questions, send them to servcast22@gmail.com. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Servcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Servcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Servcast are those of William Lamb, his guest, and no one else. Until next time, this is Servcast, signing off from Studio 22.